Israeli troops are on alert, concerned that the latest political turmoil in Lebanon might spill over the border again. The Iranian-backed militant, now political group, Hezbollah, and its allies threw Lebanon into chaos yesterday by pulling out of Lebanon's government, causing it to collapse. And this happened as Lebanon's Prime Minister, Saad Hariri, was in Washington to meet with President Obama. Thanasi Kambanis is well-versed in the politics here. His recent book is A Privilege to Die, Inside Hezbollah's Legions and Their Endless War Against Israel. He's long reported in the area and joins us now. Thanasi, welcome.
Great to be with you.
And let's remind ourselves of the timeline here. Hezbollah is thought to be behind the assassination of former Prime Minister Saad Hariri's father, Rafiq. That was in 2005. Then in 2006, the group was behind the border war with Israel. And in 2008, almost pushed Lebanon to civil war, but succeeded in forcing their way into the Lebanese government. And we understand that their move yesterday has to do with an investigation into that assassination back in 2005. Tell us.
Well, the widely held assumption is that Syria, along with Hezbollah, was involved in the assassination. So we've got the most powerful militant party in the region, that's Hezbollah, and we have a government, Syria, which also has projected a lot of power around the region. What's happening now is finally, 5 years after the murder, this international tribunal appears on the verge of releasing indictments, and everyone who's watching and following the leaks expects Hezbollah operatives to be named in this. And there's a lot of cell phone evidence, for example, linking them to the place of the murder. This, for Hezbollah, is something they simply cannot survive. They've done a lot of bellicose things. They've angered a lot of people in the region inside Lebanon, but they've always managed to present themselves as standing up against Israel and for the Arab world. The assassination of Hariri, on the other hand, paints them as a murderous, fratricidal, internecine militant movement and does a lot to tarnish their credibility with the audience that they care about the most. And that's why they're willing to do anything they can, up to and including, I think, civil war or regional war, in order to scuttle this judicial process.
Well, in fact, the title of your op-ed piece in the New York Times is Hezbollah's latest suicide mission. Is that what you mean?
Well, I think that title is very misleading because it's in no way a suicide mission. It's a Machiavellian power play in order to preserve their power.
A reminder that op-ed writers don't pick their headlines.
Exactly.
But, you know, in reading it, I'm thinking, really? Hezbollah has this much at stake that they'd shut the government down rather than let this report come out? Because they don't want their followers to know the results, if in fact the results point the finger at them. And I'm thinking, really, do Hezbollah's followers really doubt that they had anything to do with the assassination?
Absolutely. This is where you start to see the difference in mindset. Now, I look at the evidence that's leaking out and I say, hi, you know, cell phone records over months linking known Hezbollah operatives to the site of Hariri, and these cell phones are used constantly until the day he's blown up and then they're never used again. Now, Hezbollah partisans truly believe what Hassan Nasrallah, the party leader, tells them. And he tells them that, of course, Israel was behind the murder. And these Hezbollah operatives, yes, they were there using their cell phones, and they were there following him around in order to try and protect him from the Israelis. Now, to me, that's the kind of alibi that a defense lawyer would come up with at trial and be laughed at by the jury. But to Hezbollah's followers, who are so linked identity-wise to the Party of God, they believe this because if they believe something else, it becomes impossible for them to see Hezbollah as the noble resistance, and it really undoes, it begins to undo the carefully woven ideology that keeps Hezbollah so militant and so strong.
So what happens next here? As you remind us, I mean, the sitting prime minister who was in Washington to pay a call on President Obama is the son of Rafiq Hariri. He's got to push forward and find out who killed this beloved figure in Lebanon. And yet you've got the government unraveled. I mean, what happens now?
The best case scenario is still a bad one. In the best case scenario, Lebanon limps on with a caretaker government, unable to cooperate with the tribunal, unable to oppose it, indictments come out, no one will get arrested, and eventually everyone will have some kind of face-saving political compromise and will return to the kind of flawed coexistence we've seen in Lebanon recently between Hezbollah and the Hariri government. The worst-case scenario, which I think is increasingly likely, is that Hezbollah forces a really violent showdown with the governing majority, or Hezbollah provokes a war with Israel at this time as a way of both distracting from its internal problem and of unifying its supporters in the face of some other external enemy. And I'm afraid increasingly that's what we're seeing here, is a lot of structural pressure that's going to encourage Hezbollah to seek either a civil war or a regional war as a way of getting out of this fix that they've put themselves in.
Well, given all of that, Thanasi, when we had you on recently, you said we, the U.S., should be talking to terrorist groups. And the U.S. considers Hezbollah a terrorist group. So do you think that that's part of the solution, embracing this organization that has just decided to topple a government?
Well, I mean, this is one of those cases where if we had normal diplomatic relations with Hezbollah, it wouldn't affect their behavior. If we were talking to Hezbollah, we might not have been taken by surprise by what happened yesterday. It wouldn't have changed the outcome. So in this case, they're pursuing a maximalist option because it's a do-or-die situation for them. And in this case, almost no one has leverage except for Iran and Syria.
Is there a chance they're overplaying their hand?
Absolutely. I mean, there was in 2006 and 2008.
But they kept their support. And I'm just wondering, could this be the tipping moment when people say, "Wait a minute, you're willing to sacrifice the country"?
Each one of these crises that we've seen has been such a tipping point, and so far they've gotten lucky. And this time they could as well, because they're very strategic and very smart. They've spent half a year while the rest of us weren't paying attention, building a narrative for their followers that paints them as innocents here, and Israel is the villain. And, you know, again, it's a sort of fantastical dream narrative. But if they can manage to win the political showdown and the militant power showdown inside Lebanon and preserve this idea, this story they've woven, then they could win. And I would put my money on them to come out a year from now on top again in Lebanon, unfortunately. But I think the odds are slightly in their favor, only because they're so much more organized and so much more carefully planned and united than the Hariri coalition.
Thanasi Kambanis, commenting on the crisis in Lebanon. He's also author of A Privilege to Die: Inside Hezbollah's Legions and Their Endless War Against Israel. You can read his op-ed about the latest political crisis at hearandnow.org. Thanasi, thanks as always.
A pleasure.